Episode number 17 with Stephen Daniel. Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Stevie B.
And Dan G.
Dan G. How the hell are you, sir?
Oh, besides from almost getting COVID, I'm doing fantastic.
Yeah, so we should catch everyone up. Last time we were on, you were in the States. I was down in Nicaragua, and we've since both gone to Nicaragua and both come back. And now we're back in the States.
One piece.
Yes. We made it back in one piece.
Thankfully.
Several COVID tests later.
Yeah.
So let's see. We were talking about getting property down there. We were hiring water witchers to look for water. We ended up having them out. That was kind of entertaining. I sent you the video on that. There's one up on Twitter. So they both pointed in two exactly different spots on the property and swore that there was water under each one.
Yeah, let's just get the geological guy with the, machinery out there.
Yeah, surface penetrating radar. Let's trust that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
It was entertaining, though. It was kind of cool. The first guy was so adamant that there is water here. And the second guy, I didn't give him any clues. You know, I knew exactly where the spot was that the first guy said. And the second guy walked directly, like stepped on the stick that marked it for me of where the first guy was, you know, swearing on his firstborn child's life that this is where water was. He just walked right across it. And after about 50 yards, he goes, yeah, sorry, there's no water here.
Learning lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. So much for consistency or
water witchery school.
Yeah. They must have gone to different universities.
Definitely.
But we did take a look at some places.
Quite a few.
Yeah. This was a working trip. This wasn't like so much vacation as it was like
workcation.
Yeah, workcation, recon and
It was kind of work all day, party all night.
Yeah. But it, it was a lot of fun. I think I found my spot, Daniel. I think I have.
Yeah. Good old cigar capital of the world. Hey, why not?
Yeah. What are some things we can go over? Like the cost of living.
Yeah, the cost of living. Well, I guess just to give an example, I took our friend of ours. I didn't take them. We just ended up there because I had to go to that bank. Mm-hmm. they called it the Gringo Corner, where the gringos hang out, all like seven in the whole city.
Yes.
You'd say you're like kind of not really Starbucks, but you know, bakery kind of, you know, it's nice.
Yeah. You can get stuff to eat there. Luis Cafe.
Don Luis Cafe in Esteli. So two coffees, like nice coffees. I think they were pour overs or close to it. They call them percolados. Mm-hmm. And I think we had ordered like two tall glasses. I mean, it was pretty like maybe at least, you know, like 16 to 20 something ounces. Mango, papaya, you know, natural, you know, they made it for us there. And then for some reason, I don't really eat but cinnamon rolls, but it just looked really good in the window. I'm like, you know what? I'm on vacation. Grab me that cinnamon roll, big giant cinnamon roll. So two coffees, two big giant natural, you know, they'd be like fresh squeezed drinks and a cinnamon roll. And the whole thing came to $3.15.
There you go. Yeah.
Just to give you a kind of an idea of how things are. But yeah, like I would say, you know, $5, you know, you get a great meal.
Oh yeah. And the great thing of it is that $3.15, you hand the guy $5 and
you get change.
When you tip him like that, that to them is an enormous tip and you're probably paying 25 or 30% of their daily salary. You get amazing, impeccable service. When they see walk up, they rearrange the tables and chairs, depending on how many guys you got. And you just, they know, oh, this guy wants a percolato with a little bit of sugar and no cream, and this guy wants,
yeah.
I mean, it's yeah. just amazing.
And they know your name.
Yes, yes.
By the second day that I went, the second time I went to the place, both the guys knew my name, and I was like, I don't know your name. Like, I'm sorry, you know? They're like, Daniel, welcome. I'm like, whoa, hold on. It's only my second time here.
Yeah. Mario and
Raphael.
Raphael, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I know their names now because I send them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But we did start up a little business down there. Didn't buy any property, but
No. I just think that there was we were looking for land.
Yeah.
So, and we didn't realize, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of moving parts with that, but we did learn how to do everything, which is great. So I feel pretty confident, you know, let's say the next round or the next, when the time comes, that, you know, we know exactly kind of what we want and how we want it and where we want it. And, you know, so there, it was a lot of good information that way.
Yeah. 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 There's a lot to it. You got to get a lawyer, and this process takes minimum 2 months. You know, so we'd have to go back and down and sign paperwork. And one guy was saying, get a power of attorney and just have your lawyer do it. And then another guy was like, I would not trust any lawyer while you're not in the country to sign paperwork for you.
So we're like, okay, yeah, kind of after thinking about that, I'm going to go with number two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Just sign away everything for me.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a check for $40,000. Just do what you will.
Yeah. So yeah, the guys in San Juan were pretty, you know, they didn't seem like it was a big deal, but still, you know, you're still a little bit, you're running a risk, you know, giving away your power of attorney, basically letting somebody sign things for you while you're not in the country. I don't know. I feel a little uncomfortable with that personally. So
I would too. Yeah. I think the more I think about it, I'd just fly down there.
And it was part of the learning process as well, being down there talking to several different, we had some really key people, you know, from cigar factory owners to people who do construction to people. Yeah. So there was a pretty wide array of people that we spoke with, and we definitely learned the process. You know, we learned also, you know, how it works in that 2 month period. You know, if you are looking to, let's say, buy land in a place like Nicaragua, I believe it was it, Steve, if correct me if I'm wrong, you know, 10% deposit, and then the rest of the money within about two months is, I believe, is what it takes. And then the other amount would be due via a transaction, bank.
Yeah.
Transaction.
You put down 10%, the lawyer holds it.
Yeah.
And then when the property closes, or when the when it closes, then you send the other 90%.
Right.
And but. Yeah, it. It's pretty. I hear. Subject change, real quick. I hear Chacho clicking around there. How's he doing?
Oh, Shaniqua. Oh yeah,
with the long nails.
Yeah. I haven't seen him in a few weeks. Time to get those things clipped, man. Jesus, I'm gonna start painting them pretty soon.
You just got back a couple days ago. I've been back about a week or so. How did Chacho do in the kennel?
Yeah, well, for starters, I feel really terrible about putting him in a kennel, uh-huh. You know, so that was a little, I mean, it was up to you. You'd probably just killed him, but.
Euthanized, Daniel.
Yeah.
Euthanized. It sounds a lot better.
Or 2 cc's or 2 g's, bro. he did well, but he was happy to get home, you know. But yeah, no, he did good. I mean, I felt bad. It was good to see him. So he's like clicking away.
Okay. It was like he didn't even know he was gone. The dementia was so far gone that.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just bumping into more walls. I just hear this kind of every once in a while. I'm like, oh, he hit something again.
Dog is legally blind.
Yeah, he's legally, like, they would take away his driver's license already if he was a human. He's always like, oh, I can't take him on walks. It's like, you know, it's one of those with those leashes, expandable leashes. And all of a sudden, like, I don't see him because he fell into something.
Expandable. Oh, the one that retracts, you know, with the.
Yeah, the retractable. Okay. Yeah. Not expansive. I'm sorry. It's not expandable. It's like. It's not,
I guess it
band.
Does expand and retract.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I knew what you meant.
Proper bridge. So he's always falling, hitting himself. I'm going to get him a helmet soon. Like a little bumpers for his elbows or something. Oh man, yeah, I feel bad for him. But no, he's doing good. You know, he's just he's kicking it. You know, so. But I don't think I'll be doing that to him again. I'm definitely gonna do the dog sitter or something next time. Cause yeah, it's a kind of, it's just, man, you feel like a terrible piece of crap human putting your dog in a kennel.
When you drop him off, he's just looking at you like,
yeah, what? It's just terrible. You know, I'm having to put, well, you know, the thing is, you have to get these things. If it's an older dog, like I had to get it cleared with the vet. Like it was a process. She called me. We had a phone interview, like one-on-one, heart to heart. She's like, well, you know, he's an older animal and, you know, you don't, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like what? I just want to put him in the kennel. I didn't know this is like a 10-step program.
And that's just if they're older, not if they're geriatric, like Chacho.
Right, right. Yeah. 16. After 16, you got to get like approval and it has to have like, it was just, yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, I almost put him in the other place, but good thing I didn't, because the other place sent me a letter. And they said, hey, you know, there's kennel cough going around. Sorry, blah, blah, blah. So at least I didn't put him in the other one. So everything's good.
Yeah. How old is he? 19 or?
He's going to be 19.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on borrowed time. He still
walks around and stuff too. I mean,
yeah. He's he still does his thing. Wakes up every morning, wants to take a walk. Yeah. He's those Twinkies and cookies are really paying off.
They are. All that chocolate has done him well. Done him very right? well.
Oh man. Oh. Yeah. So, but yeah, but you know, buying property, it's a pretty, if you know what you're doing, it's a pretty seamless, process. The one thing I did learn, the difference between kind of the gringo way of doing thing and the Nika way of doing something is, well, first we should start out by saying, they don't really do anything with acres. They do things with manzanas.
Yeah,
so,
manzanas. Yeah. Which works out to be one manzana is, and I learned this too, Googling it. When you look it up, a manzana in Nicaragua is a different size of land than a manzana in Honduras, which is a different size of land. And like each country has their own manzana and they decide what that is. And for Nicaragua, it works out to 1.74 acres. So about an acre and 3/4 of an acre is a manzana.
Yeah. Right. And you want to make sure you got utilities, water, all your hookups are there. And hopefully, you know, you're not have to hire, hopefully you don't have to hire a water witch or go look for a well either.
Yeah. 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 So. But the way they do it, man, the breaking up those lots, they do them in such tiny.
That's exactly what I meant, Steve. Like, that's the Nika way of, so one thing, kind of thing of caution, is building, you know, we here in the States have, you know, a thing called setbacks.
Yeah.
where we set back, you know, between property lines. In Nicaragua, that's really not a thing. There's no such thing as a setback. So basically you could pee in your neighbor's hand, you know, out the window, you know?
Yeah. It's they have like these little tiny lots that end up being stacked housing by this time they sell off all the lots. And
yeah, because they're trying to squeeze. They try to squeeze as much as they can into the manzana.
Yeah. And so these lots will be like 30 feet wide, if even that, by maybe 50.
24,
feet.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
24 feet by wide by what?
50 24.
Feet? Oh, 24 by 24. That's what it was?
Well, it was 24 by 25, actually, was the last ones we looked at. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, just a little postage stamp. And
yeah.
I don't want to build a big place right next to that because you're going to be like just this big giant place next to the ghetto, you know, like that.
Glorified chicken shack.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So just word of caution, buy your own manzana.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to deal with that. You need something that's already, you know, it's your own manzana. Do what you will. Way easier, way more seamless. You don't have to deal with any of that because they're just trying to squeeze. That's just a Nicaraguan way of doing things. They just, you know, put up a wall and there's no setback. Like literally, you can touch the house next to you with your hand. You know.
Yeah, yeah. That's not what we're looking for.
No, but in on the beach area and, you know, the gringo kind of, you know, double bunny air quotes sort of thing. They seem to, you know, do things a little bit more of a residential kind of like gringo-ish kind of way, you know, so they have, as you saw, right, Steve?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it caters more. So it just depends what you want. You know, do you want to move to Nicaragua, you know, be like, hang out with a bunch of gringos next to you? Or do you want more of the like classic, you know, like Nicaraguan, you know, old school feel, you know? So that's probably the main difference between, you know, a city like Esteli or a beach city like San Juan del Sur.
Yeah. But we did set up an Airbnb down there. The house that we rented for a month and a half or 2 months, Joe's still down there right now. he can't leave.
Yeah, he's just like partying away. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, thanks for getting me sick, Joe.
Yeah.
He just ran himself down to a nub.
Yeah. Yeah, but we set up an Airbnb with that house. So we've got, let's see, we're renting it for $400 a month with internet and electricity. It probably comes out to $450 for right now, a 2-bedroom, 2-bath house, but we're going to convert that kind of den into another bedroom. So it'll be 3-bedroom.
Yeah, 3-bedroom, 3-bath. It's a pretty large house, upstairs, downstairs.
How many square feet you think it is? 1500?
No, yeah, easy 1500. Yeah,
I would maybe 17.
Yeah, 1500 to 1700 square feet. So it's a really nice size house. You know, nice wraparound porch. You know, hammocks. You know, just you know, it's nice view.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a real mango trees right outside your door. Bananas and yeah, it's
coconuts.
Yeah, coconuts. Scorpions in your bed. Yeah, yes, nice.
Yeah,
stuff.
Scorpions in your bed. Don't forget the tarantulas. Yeah.
Yeah, tarantulas. Yeah, the insects there are very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no. They're all, you know, for the most part, you leave them alone. They leave you alone. I didn't really have any problems. I think Joe, our friend Joe, he actually found a scorpion on his wall, but yeah, so.
Right on. But yeah, we're going to try to Airbnb it. So we're basically, we rented it for 3 months. We're going to go back down to Nicaragua in 3 months and spruce the place up, assuming that this business model works. And we'll do things like put the electronic door lock on the front door so they don't have to get a key. Let's see what else. We got internet set up down there now. Yeah, we'll see if we can Airbnb it, basically sublet it like you're doing down in Colombia and at
we set it up in a whole how long did that take us to set
4 hours. 4 hours. Yeah, 4 hours set up an Airbnb. I was like, okay, we got to clean the house, we got to sweep, we got to mop, we got, you're like, no, editing on the photos, just click click click. vivid. Click the vivid one, that's the one that works.
Turn like, up the contrast. Turn up the contrast. Down with the brightness.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes. You guys can check it out. It's a really, really neat.
It's a cool place. It's beautiful. Beautiful spread. You know, the property sits on probably what, like 4 or 5 manzanas?
3 manzanas.
3 manzanas with a restaurant, pool. It's like the pool parties on the weekends. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
Food's excellent. You know, the dueña, the owner, she loves us. We made in good with her.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
She's like, it's your place. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think this could be quite successful.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're starting doing this in the low season, so we may have to kick it out another 3 months to see how it does in the high season starting in November.
Yeah. We're not. I mean, we basically did that just to kind of secure and kind of show face that, you know, like, hey, here's some money, kind of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, but November through March, you know, right around May is the busy season out there. So there's that's the dry season. So we're kind of tailing into, the beginnings of the, wet season here. So we just kind of have we don't really expect too much, but, if we get anything, fantastic. If not, it's not the end of the world.
We'll see how it works. We'll see.
We even have a painter. We got a painter in there, you know, painting a mural on the wall.
Oh, that was all you. Yeah. And Joe sent me a picture, or maybe you did, of the painter. Yeah. So when you walk into the place, you'll see it in the listing. When you go in the front door, there's a giant wall going into one of the bedrooms. And Daniel came up with the idea of doing like a mural on the wall and painting like green leaves that kind of match the trees on the property, you know, like big banana leaves and stuff. It looks really good.
Yeah, just a nice, simple kind of two color, you know, kind of greenish and black with a little white on the wall. So yeah, just really pretty. Just give a little tropical feel. Takes care of the whole wall. Now we don't have to hang anything on that wall. And it's actually looks nice because when you walk into the house, it's the first thing you see. It's these big, giant, like 3-4 foot leaves all over this gigantic wall. So yeah, it's really cool.
And that was what, $200 for a
painter? Yeah,
it's taken him 3 days to do it. I mean, this wall is 30, 40 feet wide by probably 15,
huge.
20 feet tall. I mean, it's a huge wall.
It goes up to the second story and it goes almost wall to wall on both sides of the house.
Yeah.
It literally takes up the whole house. The only thing separating would just be the staircase.
Yeah. And he rides his bike up that hill every morning with all the paint and stuff on his bicycle, right? Starts painting.
Oh yeah. We looked over where he lives and he told me, he's like, "Well, you see that mountain over there?" And I was like, "Wait, are we talking about the same mountain?" And he's like, "Yeah, I live at the top of that." And I was like,
"God,
I'm like, you rode your bike here?" It would be like looking out at like a mountain from wherever you're at, like as far as you could see almost, and with like a satellite on top of the mountain.
Just as it starts to go over the horizon because of the curvature of the earth, that's where it is.
That's kind of like, just give you an idea of the distance. And there's like the town sits like in this big kind of valley in a way, right?
Yeah.
And we're on one top of the, like about halfway up on one side of the valley, and it's completely out yonder on the other. And Joe, our friend Joe's like, "Yeah, you know, this guy's, you know, he's late." I'm like, "You know what? I have a lot of experience. Don't worry about it. I can tell he's really good. He'll be here." So he came, you know, the next day, and you know, he was supposed to be there at 9, and it turned out to be about 10, and he's just like sweating. And he's like, "Yellow, yellow." And I'm like, he doesn't say it like yellow. Like yellow means ice. He says, "Agua yellow." He goes, "Agua yellow." And I'm like, "Agua con yellow?" You know, I didn't know what he's saying. He just said, "Agua yellow, agua yellow." And I was like, "What the hell is agua yellow?" I was like,
Water, dude. Do you have any idea how hard this was? I haven't even started working yet. I just got here.
Yeah. So I had to give him like water and ice. And yeah, he had to like cool down for about 20 minutes before he even started. And then I looked at this bike and I was like, "You rode that thing?" I don't think it even had gears, man.
Oh, God.
It was a mountain bike with like a wooden box of his like paint and stuff. I was like, "What's going on?" Dude. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So but yeah, he's gonna paint some stuff for my house and send it over here too, so you know, give him a little extra business too. So yeah,
oh, like fun. Paintings you mean, or?
yeah I'm gonna have him do some. He's a really good artist. He's a fantastic artist. So yeah, he said he could send him up to me, so I said, "Okay, cool, right on. I'll send you the pictures, just send them on up, just let me know how to get the money to you."
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, anybody need anything painted, let us know. We'll hook you up.
He'll ride his bike down there.
Yeah. I mean, I bring him to the house, but the visa's kind of expensive.
It'd take him forever to get there.
Yeah. He'd probably say yes. He's like, "I'm in Tijuana now."
"Oh, it's only been 3.5 months. I'll go pick you up."
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, "Oh, wow." Yeah, so labor is pretty inexpensive. You can get like this guy here. I mean, if he charged me like three, it would be like $3,000 at least to do that wall here in my house. You know what I mean? If I had the same thing done, like someone says, "Hey, that's $3,000. I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, I get it." You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So hopefully a little bit of, we should probably put a picture of that up on the site there, Steve.
Yeah, we probably should.
And he's using this like rickety old wooden ladder, and like it's just like, God.
I didn't think about that. What did he do for the ladder? Did he just borrow one from the, did Amilcar give him a ladder, or did he put that on his bike too?
I couldn't. Yeah, no, he borrowed a ladder.
Oh, okay. All right. Bastard's got to bring a ladder up.
Yeah, dude, I wouldn't be surprised, but you know, I was like, you know, just getting home. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And oh, by the way, the roads, you know, once you get out of the city, even in the city, aren't that great.
No, especially not for a bicycle.
Yeah. It's like mud and dirt and like there's no, it's not cobblestones. I mean, even cobblestone would be like a dream.
Yeah.
I mean, I need like a chiropractic adjustment after I like, you know, one drive, you know, up to the property, you know what I mean? Cause it's not paved.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You need a four, but you need a 4x4.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, taxis do get up there, but it's a little sporty.
Yeah. you're hopping a little, yeah. You know, when you get out of the car, you're a little shorter.
Yeah. A little compressed spine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
Oh, how's your Airbnb and how did it do? Your
which one?
In Santa Barbara, while you were down in Nicaragua, rented the thing out and it worked out.
Yes,
well?
Yeah, I was a little nervous because I'm like, okay, I set all this Airbnb, worked all hard to do this, and now I'm leaving it to somebody else to basically stay on my property and manage for me for the first time.
Yeah, just met this girl, but right before
just met her on Craigslist. Craigslist. No, I'm kidding. I'm like, two pics for an iPhone. she's, I know her and she's actually pretty good about these things, but you don't know anybody until they live with you. Right. So,
but
she did really well. She said that I had, what was that? What was the word she used? I have
amazing eyes.
No, oh. I have low Airbnb esteem. That's what she said. And I was like, well, what do you mean I have low Airbnb in esteem? And she goes, yeah, you're just not charging enough for your place. And I'm like, you know, I'm a neophyte to this. So, you know, tell me what I need to do.
Yeah.
And she basically more than doubled the price.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she put all these like service fees and like tax, like all these weird fees on there. I'm like, I'm not trying to rip people off. I'm trying to give them a good experience here.
Yeah.
You know? So anyways, she worked it out and she more than doubled my price, which didn't seem to be an absolute a problem, zero at all. So yeah, it was pretty much completely booked out while I was gone.
That's
so
awesome.
I literally, within 4 hours, people were booking the place.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So, and that was, I don't know if you want to talk any numbers just to give somebody, I mean, this is kind of a higher area, you know?
Yeah. Higher end area. It's
yeah. You know, I'm not saying you're going to make that in like, some far out place in Wichita. Yeah. Tennessee. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm just, this is my own experience. So we did,
but
one.
You were going to list it for like $70 or something, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, like, honey. No.
Yeah.
This is 200. You're like, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, this is 200. Really?
She's for like, a room.
Yeah. For like a room with a private entrance and their own. She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. I didn't even, honestly, I'm like, sure, whatever, Bob, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it turned out, yeah, it was completely booked the whole time, and I'm like, wow, okay, well, that works.
Nice.
So yeah, and in like 2 week period, I would say, well, I mean, let's see, about $1,350. You know, $1,350.
Nice.
within 2 weeks. And that's just putting it up though. I literally put it up a day before, like a couple days before I left.
I mean, if you did that whole house, you're.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Trust me. I know. I get it. I see the numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to live here anymore. Okay. Leave me alone. so you can, and that's not even the whole place. That's like a private entrance room with their bathroom. That's like not, it's a room.
I mean, that's probably 20% of the square footage of your house, if that.
Yeah, if that, right, exactly. So yeah, it's, you could, I believe, you know, just, you know, off the cuff, you know, in a nicer area, just a room, I mean, over 3,000.
Yeah,
pretty easy. And like, and this is a higher season though. Right now it's summertime, kind of beach, Santa Barbara, So, but yeah, there's no reason why you can't do at least 3,000 with just a room.
Yeah. Yeah. Per month, you mean?
Yeah. 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 Per month. Yeah. So, I just didn't want anybody like kind of, I just, you know, cause I wanted to see how things went and da 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 and what the damage was. And, but no, everything was absolutely fine. You know, when I came back, I was actually pretty impressed. Now in Colombia, numbers are a little different. It's about, you know, it's about, you know, about 3 to 1, you know, so there, you know, we can only get, obviously it's not a first world country. So probably getting about $54 a night, around $54 a night there.
Okay. Okay. And that yeah, one so, has been renting or?
Yeah, that one just went online literally the same week. Actually just a little after. No, I'm sorry. It went online while I was in Nicaragua.
Okay.
And that's a condo overlooking the city, 2-bedroom, 2-bath. Gym, infinity pool, like, and it has all the, you know, creature comfort, security guards, you know, that goes for about $54 a night.
Nice.
And nice. I was able to book that. Now, one thing I did learn, doing things in another language is highly difficult, especially when you're trying to conduct business. But number two is I noticed the people in other countries, people, the locals from that country, are a lot less familiar with the application. So you get a lot more stupid questions.
Okay. All right. Yeah. This is their first time using Airbnb and you're the one that has to go through this.
Yeah.
Did you say, or a computer?
Yeah. No. I had some stuff I was dealing with and I'm like, oh my God, you do not get this at all. You know what I mean? So I have a co-host. By the way, the co-host is really important. So if you can get your co-host thing set up, or you got somebody who can help you with that, you know, luckily I have a co-host in both places, in these two, and the co-host that I have down there, you know, she was able to, you know, answer everything in Spanish. And, you know, I mean, she's even like, dude, these people are crazy. I'm like, I'm learning real quick that I think, you know, most of the Colombians, because there's a lot of American tourists, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's the other flip side of that where you have, you know, people that are just, you know, younger traveling, they're just not familiar. You know, they don't know how the Airbnb really works. So just word to the wise for people opening things up or wanting to in different countries. If it's not like a first world country, you know, you're going to be dealing with local people. It is a little bit of a challenge. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like I'm sitting here going like, why are they asking me these completely stupid questions? I had one that was like, hey, I need more personal service. I'm like, what do you need? You know, and she's like trying to put her telephone. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. You have to like, you know, there's a place there where you can call. They just don't know how to do anything, you know, but you get some business people as well. Don't get me wrong. So it was actually kind of a nice story, I guess. I had a direct booking. So you can do the direct booking, which is kind of, you know, double bunny air quotes off the books. Those are nice once you get clientele built up. Like I know our guy, Dane, he does a lot of direct bookings as well. He just has people that are coming in and out of the city. They just contact him directly. You know, he has a book of business.
So direct booking means they're not going through the Airbnb app, so you don't have to pay the rake.
Right. But you know, don't get me wrong. Like, Airbnb does a fantastic job. I think the GUI interface is great. It's easy to use. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of, you know, working parts to it. You really want to get things automated, which I haven't done yet. But you know, it's a time thing. Automated messaging, you know, for their, you know, security, their codes to get in or however you want to set it up. But yeah, the direct booking thing, I would say, is after someone's been doing things a while, you know, you just get to know people get to know your place or whatever it is. And so, you know, outside of Airbnb, you'd be doing direct bookings. And it's 3% that you pay to Airbnb, which really isn't hardly anything. I'm more than happy to pay him. I'm not trying to do anything outside personally. We just had an incident, positive incident, where my co-host knew somebody and they needed a place for a few days. So we put them up and, you know, they just paid cash.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the first booking that I took, I had to go through three different Colombians and basically say no to them.
Yeah. they wanted a pedicure every morning. Is that what it was?
This is too elongated of a story, but I'll save it for another time. But anyways, I got a gentleman in there because in Bucaramanga in Colombia, there's some really good medical. So a guy, had to take his niece for some medical issues she had. So he booked it for the whole month. And he actually he's probably going to need it longer. I told him that I'd block out, 2 weeks after he was there, and because he might need the place longer, but he has to talk to the doctor. So it was just kind of nice that, hey, I'm kind of doing something, good for somebody in a way,
Yeah. You're helping him out and he's helping you out. You got.
Yeah. So that was actually kind of nice. Now you don't get as much money. Now you make more money. And this is something that I learned real quick. You don't make as much money on these longer stays because you're not there. It's more work because you got to go in there and clean. If you have somebody there, people there every, let's say 3-4 days or whatever it is, every other day. And then one thing that I learned, exactly what I'm saying real quick here, is your reviews. So if you're just starting out, your reviews are really important. So luckily I had at least one review before I got this guy in. But my point is, you got to make a decision. You're like, okay, well, I can take this longer stay, for like 30 days and I might be able to get a review, but then, everything starts all over again at the end of that month. And now I'm kind of struggling to get a review, right?
Yeah. Now you've been online for a month and a half and you only have two reviews.
Exactly. Well, hopefully two reviews. So yeah. When I could have had, if I held out and maybe I could have got 5 or 6 reviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a decision that bottom line, if you're in need of the money, then yeah, of course, look, take it, yeah. But if you don't need the money, just kind of, hold your guns and, stick to the program, follow the plan and, it'll come kind of thing, So yeah. I'm not going to lie. I was a little, I go, oh my gosh, this is gonna, no. I was a little stressed out because one, I'm doing something in a completely different country and I'm like, okay, am I gonna keep paying for this? But I was pleasantly surprised. It took about 3 or 4 days of being on Airbnb and, then things started to come in, people communicated and they weren't all that great, but at least there was traction. Yeah. One really great thing about Airbnb, which I really, really like, is they really put attention on your place when you're first starting out.
So yeah, they basically put you to the top of the list.
Yeah, they bump you to the top of the list. And I thought, that's a really cool thing that they do. I mean, they obviously don't have to do that because Superhost, which is the status that you really want, I don't know the exact number of as many stays as you need and stars to require, but it has like at least 4.8, you need like 50 or 60 stays. That's really what you want because that's how you really get bumped to the top of the list. Now that is something you should strive for, obviously. I would say, after, I think they do it for about 2 months is I'm assuming this, but at least a month that they put you at that top just to really kind of help you out, get things started, Okay. So you're up there with the super host for a while, which is not really nice, Yeah. And I'm pretty certain it helped me.
Nice. Yeah. It can't hurt when they look you up. Absolutely. You're at the top of the list.
Yeah. Number one. Yeah. Even as you saw the one that we did, Steve, that's at number one. So if you look up in the city, that's the first one that comes up now.
Yep. Yeah. That is cool. Yeah. That is cool. You've got a line on some cigars, right?
Oh yeah. Now that was something kind of interesting. Now we're buying humidors. By the way, I didn't smoke a single cigar before this.
You smoked a cigar before this? Is that what you said?
No, I never even smoked a cigar. I was like, those are disgusting. And then Now I'm like, hey, where can I find some of these?
I'm buying a humidor.
Yeah, I'm buying a humidors. I'm seasoning things. I'm like, I'm like, I can't find a good damn cigar cutter anywhere. Yeah, so we made some really good friends there. I don't want to mention his name, but there's one factory owner who cruises around with that monkey.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to put him on blast, his name, just in case. I don't know. But I guess those are Havanas. He does a lot of Havanas. And
yeah. So it's Cuban tobacco that they grow in Nicaragua. So they take the Cuban seeds, they grow it in Nicaragua. So essentially you have a Cuban cigar and he's Cuban. And so they essentially make Cuban cigars in Nicaragua. It's kind of cool. And they're really good.
They are fantastic cigars. Yeah. And they're, I would say, you know, you don't, when you get a Cuban, right, you're like, well, where's this been? How did it get here? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now what happened in Nicaragua is all the Cubans, was a bunch of Cubans came over, bought all this land in this city. And because it was ripe for tobacco, so they brought all their seeds over. Now I guess all the best cigars in the world basically come from this city.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, and they taste, I was granted, they taste better because a lot more fresh. They're, it's like farm to table.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, farm to ashtray.
Yeah, farm to ashtray. Farm to humidor.
Yeah, and you got a line on some other cigars. They were my favorite. I mean, I probably smoked hundreds of cigars.
They're Cuban cigars, 100%. Yeah. They're Cuban cigars. You know, if you put a Cuban fresh and that one fresh, you wouldn't. There is no difference.
Yeah,
at least I can't. You know, nobody that I've talked to has been able to tell.
So we got a line on that one factory, and then we got a line on the other one, Corona, right?
Yeah, La Corona.
La Corona. Yeah, those were my favorite.
The kind of the construction and the, you know, the way that, you know, it pulls and everything. Those are really good as well. Yeah, those are actually probably just a little bit better, and they're just a little bit more as well. As far as money.
Yes, yeah. But for me, it's worth it. I mean, are you gonna bring some over? And then did you wanna sell some? Should we talk about that on the show or?
Oh yeah, we're bringing over thousands of them, man.
Okay, all right. So
I'm converting a huge, gigantic, gargantuan humidor room now.
Your pantry is going to become a humidor.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole pantry room in the back. I'm like, food? Who needs food?
I see money.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, well, when you get typically, oh no, I brought some back with me. I mean, I brought 100 back. So you can bring them back, but you know they're. You know, you're going to get ones that don't have any rings on them. They'll still have rings, but just depending, but we get them direct from the factory. So they're so fresh. They don't even have time to put the ring on them.
Okay. Well, will these, if people from the show buy them, will these have the paper ring around them or no?
Yeah. Well, what we do is we be getting them, we get them direct. So they're basically shipped fresh. And then, they just got to hit and get all the taxes paid up on the East Coast, and then they basically just ship them over to us. It takes about 2 weeks.
Okay, so no ring or ring?
Oh, ring. Yeah, ring.
They come with the ring. Okay.
Yeah, so everything's ringed, everything's packaged. Now the La Coronas, don't quote me because we haven't got our first shipment of them. Those are all individually packed. The other ones,
so individually packed, if they buy a brick of 24 or 25,
each one will have a
plastic sheet around it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then it'll all come wrapped. in a brick wrapped in plastic.
Yeah. Okay. So everything's super fresh. And then the other ones, I believe that those are, don't quote me because we still have to do some contact and we're getting the order straight and everything as well. Those will be, I believe those will be individually packed as well with the ring, of course.
Okay.
So. Yeah, right. the ones I brought over in my bag, those don't have any rings on them.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
but the La Corona ones do. Those are, yeah, they're, okay. Yeah. I mean, for the price, I mean, you can't. Well, I mean, how much is? I mean, good cigars, what, $20-$30?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. So I think we should
be able to sell them for like maybe ten for the
10 bucks.
For
yeah,
the Corona
10 bucks.
Ones, and then eight for the
Havanas.
For the Havanas.
Yeah. Yeah. 10. Yeah. All listeners, 10 or eight, you know, okay. I'll work out the shipping. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. So, that for each stick plus shipping, I think.
Yeah. We'll work it out. Yeah, it's all good. I mean, they're just kind of just like happy to have them, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in some cigars, hit us up, stevebartonmoney@gmail.com.
Yeah. On, we'll send you out some freshies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They are very good. I've smoked all of the ones that Daniel's talking about. And,
well, actually, you smoked all the ones you brought back already. So
I did. Yeah. Them. I brought 10 of them back. I think they were gone in about 3.5 days.
They're real. I'm not just saying this. I mean, this is coming from somebody who like never. I thought backwards.
Backwards cigars.
You're talking to somebody who was like, yeah, people would just like spit on me if I walked into a cigar store before.
Oh man, yeah.
They're like, what did you say? You backwards? What?
You're smoking Swisher Sweets?
Swisher Sweets? Yeah. I can't even. I mean, that's just after this trip. There's just no way. I'm like, it's just, yeah, it's a far thought now.
I went down after I ran out of the tent and I went and bought a little 2-pack of Swisher Sweets, and I got through about a third of the first one. And I'm like, this absolutely tastes like shit. It's just completely unsmokable. I would rather not smoke than smoke something so awful. But
right,
so I'm looking forward to that first shipment.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh well, explain to them too, Steve. Now, if you have guys ever go, anybody ever goes down, or anybody who buys cigars, you got to explain what dog rockets are.
Oh yes. Swisher Sweets or dog rockets.
Yeah, those would be considered a dog rocket.
Yeah, yeah. The way they what Cigar Joe was talking about a couple episodes ago about dog rockets, what they'll do with, okay, so the way they roll these cigars is they'll take the entire tobacco leaf, they'll pull out the vein, the long part of the leaf that runs from the top to the bottom, the veiny part, so you're not smoking that. And then they literally just kind of roll it in a, roll it into a cigar. Well, the cigar may, is supposed to be, we'll say, 8 inches long, but with the leaf and all the overhang and stuff, it's maybe 10 or 12 when they're done with it. So they got to cut off either end, and they'll use that cut, and they'll make other cheap dog rockets out of it, right? Yeah. So it never
more
really
dog rocket for your dog rocket.
Yeah, it never really smokes right because it's not the whole leaf wrapped up. It's just like these little cut ends, and these will be none of that. These will be pure, just amazing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm pretty certain every cigar I've ever bought previously on vacation was a dog rocket.
Yes. And I thought I was smoking a Cuban.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember this specifically because I was with my girl not very long ago, actually. And I was like, oh, I feel like having something. We're kind of buzzed, dancing around, doing some salsa, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, hon, I feel like, having a little smoke or something. I'm like, yeah. Some guy comes up. He's like, I got Cubans, And I'm like, really?
How much can I overpay for these?
I think he started at 20, and I'm in Colombia, and that's like a lot. That's a lot of money there, right? I'm like, dude, like, I don't know, man. I'll give you 15. He's like, no problem.
Oh, damn it! I should have said 8.
Yeah, I was quite slightly inebriated, so I bought. So I'm pretty certain I bought a dog rocket, and I was probably sitting there saying, wow, this is really good. I like this.
Yeah. The best cigar ever.
Oh, best cigar I've had in years. Oh, I love these. Yeah, I'm sure they've been sitting in the humidor for just weeks now.
Yeah. Perfectly humidified, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I get his shoebox in his closet. Stuffed in his dirty sock. Yeah. So learn something new every day.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I apologize to any aficionados of like cigars or anything out there because I didn't know anything before this trip.
It's really impressive visiting the factories, though. I mean, like they work in pairs, they work in partners. So, like, one of them will kind of be rolling the rough part of the cigar, and then they put it in a press for 45 minutes, and then they hand it over to their partner, and they finish it off with like the outer leaf and make it all beautiful and cut it perfectly. And a lot of the partners have been working together for like 15, 20, some 30 years.
Yeah. It's like a relationship.
It is. Yeah. Some of them even had a husband and wife.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine going to work with my wife, rolling cigars for 8 or 10 hours and then going home for 30 years. But they must have a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, just finishing each other off all day and night.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's great.
The amount of tobacco in their systems must be crazy.
they got to absorb that nicotine in through their hands because they don't wear gloves.
They don't wear gloves. No, there's no gloves in there. It's not like some like cocaine factory.
Yeah.
All suited up or anything, you know? Yeah. They're just, you know, like literally everything's by hand, you know, it's crazy. Yeah. It's pretty incredible and very impressive actually to watch the process, you know, and it was a really great learning experience too. You know?
Yeah, it was for me too. It was a neat town. It's a lot.
Yeah. And the process of the time, you know, when they first pick it and then they got to dry it. I think it's, please don't quote me again. I'm a neophyte when it comes to cigars here. I'm like a kid in a candy store right now. Okay. So, but it's about 2 years.
They said the fastest could be 18 months from the time they plant it to it grows into a tobacco plant.
Yeah.
They cut the leaves off, hang them, dry them. And they got to cure them in a certain humidity for like 6 months. And then they take them out, roll them, and then
separate them
by leaf colors. And color. That's another interesting part is that women apparently have much better.
See color better.
They see color better.
They only separate.
Women separate the leaves because they can see the color better than men. So when you open up that or you get your brick of cigars, they're all the same color. There's not like one random light one in there and they're all the rest are dark. They all look exactly the same. They're all cut exactly the same. All the rings are in exactly the same spot. They put them on this little, I can't remember what it's called, but it's this little sucker machine that makes sure that it's pulling, you know, 30 inches of mercury or whatever the hell it is, you know, to make sure that it's going to draw evenly. And there's a lot more to that process than I had any idea what was going on.
You even tried
to roll a cigar. Remember that? I got a video of that. I'll throw that up on Twitter.
Please don't do that. It's kind of embarrassing.
It just looks like a monkey fucking a football. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. With nobody on the other end.
Yeah. And no football.
And no football. Just air fucking. Yeah. 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 It was, not the most finesse thing I've ever done.
No, you completely destroyed those tobacco leaves.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. Like, I wouldn't even give that cigar to my enemy. Yeah. But if anybody wants a cigar, hit us up. We'll send you out whatever you want.
Yeah, a brick or whatever.
Yeah. Well, usually 20, yeah, 10. I mean, I don't even know, whatever. I don't know. It's more of a fun thing for me at least.
The iPhone thing. You weren't able to bring your iPhone down to try the iPhone.
Well, I did have the iPhone. I had my cousin. She was giving me the iPhone 11, but then she called me like 3 days before my trip and says it has a back display, and I didn't even realize the iPhone 11 has a back, like just not a display, but it's kind of a casing, I guess. Like it can break like the front.
Okay.
And so it was going to be like $300 to fix, and they couldn't get the part in time. I'm like, just forget it. But that's iPhone 11s are definitely a big thing now. Just an iPhone in general, as you guys were talking about previously, there's no iPhone stores, a high priced commodity down there. So yeah, take a couple, at least iPhone 10s or 11s minimum. You'll be able to sell them right away.
Okay. Okay.
Pay for your ticket at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah. So that was kind of a, you know, kind of a small timer hustle, but it's still a little hustle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that was interesting, we used the same driver. His name was Wendell. We like to call him Wendell and Andretti because he drives like a bat out of hell. He thinks he's in some race or something getting to the airport. He took us down to the airport in his taxi. And
with no seatbelts, by the way.
No seatbelts.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, great. I have an oh shit handle.
Yes. But
I messaged you, Steve, when I was there, and I said, does this guy drive kind of fast, or is it just me? Like, no, he's like a bat out of hell.
Yes.
He's like, 2-lane highway, passing semi coming. I'm like, oh my God, okay, I see the God light coming.
Yes. Yeah. What was it you said? You're like, this is Wendell Andretti. He thinks he's in a race or something.
My God. Yeah. He was like on a timer, you know? Yeah. So he, it was actually kind of interesting because you talked to him, you were talking to him in Spanish about, and because I was just kind of shitting my pants the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, can we pull over so I can check my underwear?
You said you neglected to tell me I was taking the Indy 500 with no seatbelts back to Managua. I think Wendell believes he's trying to win a race.
That's the exact message. Thanks for pulling that up, Steve.
Yeah.
that was it. But anyways, I got him to slow down a little bit because I started talking to him about gold and silver.
Yeah, he's the only person in Nicaragua that I was able to find that even had a clue when it came to the economy and the upcoming tidal wave with gold and silver. It was kind of neat.
And he was like a 22, 23 year old kid.
Yeah, he's just a kid. But he used to work in a jewelry store. And so he has a line on gold and silver bars down there.
Yeah. And I got a little more information than you had previously got out of him, I believe, about the mines and all that stuff.
Yeah, so they got a lot of mines down there. You know, when you were telling me that, now that I'm thinking about it, he did tell me that, but I didn't totally understand what he was saying because I remember him saying that you can get an ounce for $1,120. And I was like, I must be hearing the numbers wrong or something. I don't understand because the spot price, well, at that time, I think was $1,900. Right now, it's about $1,800. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would it be so cheap?
Right. So he was talking in, because they do in grams.
Okay.
So 28 grams in an ounce.
Okay.
So he was like 40 dólares, you know, más o menos, like it could be a little bit less, just a little bit more, but basically $40 for a gram of gold. And I was like, oh, okay, busted out the calculator. I'm like, okay, that's like 1120, I think, or something. And I was like, wow, that's quite off the spot price. And I was very sure. I asked him like literally five times. I was like, are you sure? He's like, nope, this is what it is. Da, da, da. So then he started explaining the process of what people do. And this was actually interesting. And because there's several mines there that I didn't even know about, but I do now. Mm-hmm. And he knows this. He's in contact with there's a guy that some of the miners go to. I don't know if it's all the mines, some of the mines, a couple of the mines, but at least a couple go to a guy. And the guy is, he buys gold from the mines. And this guy goes and takes that gold and does one of two things. One, he sells it direct to people. And the second thing he does is he goes down to the capital city, and that's where, I don't know how close to spot he gets or whatever, but obviously he makes money when he turns it into the capital city. But what I found out that you could do, and what people do is you can buy this at like, you know, basically $40 a gram.
Which comes out to a little bit more than $1,100 per ounce.
Right.
When the spot price here is $1,800, or worldwide spot price is $1,800.
So then what you do is you go and you buy your ounce, your ounce to whatever, I don't know, however much you want to get. And then they have a guy there and you go directly to this basically jeweler and you get it all, they melt it down for you right there. And then you just tell them what kind of bracelet you want. And then you're like, hey, like, I don't know, I love you, Stevie,
make me a 2-ounce gold bracelet, and then you wear it out of the country. So now you got 2 ounces of gold for $2,200 instead of almost $4,000. Might not be as easy to interchange when you get out there, but I think it's still just like a really cool game that I would love to have a couple of bracelets just for a story, you know?
Yeah. So I definitely want to do this just for the story purpose.
Yeah. For the experience.
Exactly. Yeah. For the experience, but I don't want to buy too much gold either because it's kind of dangerous when you're like probably up in some mountain from some dude buying gold. Yeah. With a bunch of other third world country people, and that's like more money than they make in the entire like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you make $150 a month, you know, and you know, some guy just rolls up and buys like a couple $1,000 worth of gold, it's like, yeah, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, to us it's not a lot, but to them it is. So I say that with great caution.
Yeah, I still want to try it though. I think it'd be great.
Oh, no. I'm definitely doing it, you know. Yeah. I woke up at 4:30 in the morning sick, you know, driving through the Nicaraguan mountains in the 4x4. So there you go.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. I think that's going to be fun. I want to do that when we go back in 3 months. I'll come back with a gold bracelet.
Yeah, so yeah, TBD, you know, to be determined, you know what happened. So if Steve's not on the show anymore, you know what happened, guys. Yeah. If you just heard Dan G and know Stevie B, yeah, you know exactly what happened. Yeah. I'm like, he's just not here anymore.
Yeah.
Last I saw him, he was on some hill in Nicaragua.
Yeah, trying to buy gold.
Yeah. Saw some guy with a couple guns. I don't know what happened, man.
I've been getting into, I know you've been busy with the Airbnb stuff, but I've been looking at some stocks and slowly kind of moving some of my net worth into the gold and silver miners. I've been totally nerding out on this, probably researching and just listening to books and YouTube videos 4 to 6 hours a day. Just on this for the last 2 months. Oh, wow. The whole time I was in Nicaragua.
So you gave up porn?
I did, yeah. Well, not completely. Not completely. But yeah, I have cut down on my, my porn uptime. And,
they're like, we miss you, Steve.
I'm getting alerts on my phone. Yeah, alerts. Are you okay?
Yeah, are you okay? Notifications from Jenna J. You're not part of our fan club anymore?
Yeah, what happened? You're our biggest fans only.
Yeah.
Subscription. Yeah, our biggest, yeah.
You don't love us on live streaming anymore?
But yeah, some of these gold and silver miners, looking back over the history of the last bull market runs, oh man, they, you know, the last two bull markets, you know, gold went from in the 70s from $1.50 to $50. And then in 1980, it went from $5 to $50. Man, if they do the same kind of thing here, those miners are just going to kill it. It's probably going to be 3 to 5x whatever you invest now.
Yeah, it's definitely coming. I mean, God, you went to Costco when you came back, didn't you?
Oh, man. The just the New York steaks alone. I usually get the package of New York steaks. It's four of them. It works out to be about 6 pounds of meat. Before my trip, I went down and got four, and it was $40. And then a month and a half, 7 weeks later, when I came back, I went back to Costco, got the same thing, 6 pounds of meat, New York steak, $52.
Yeah.
Went up $12. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's about that 10, 15%. I don't know, kind of within that window, a little bit more, a little less, but everything is, yeah. Everybody's talking about it now, of course. I know your bananas are now 49 cents instead of 26, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, it's here. And they're trying to blame it on the shipping and that. I'm like, no, man, that's just straight up inflation, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just continue to print money from thin air out of nothing. To not expect it to cause inflation. And I think we're entering a big commodity market, you know. Yeah. And I was looking over my, we got a deferred compensation plan through my work. It's essentially like a 401k. You know, you put money in there and you can't withdraw it until you separate employment. And I was looking through all the plans on there, all the funds, and there's not a single commodity fund.
It's all Google and Apple.
Yeah, Microsoft, you know, stuff like that. And there is one fund that has energy in it. So it's got like Nextra, Duke. What's another popular one that we got? Brookfield Renewable Partners. It has that in it. So I got some of my money in that. But yeah, there's no commodity fund at all. You cannot convert your Microsoft into oil. You just can't do it. There's no agriculture. There's no precious metals. And so I was on the phone with Voya, the company that offers this. And I said, you know, like, you guys have these commodity funds and these oil funds, but they're not in our plan that I can invest in through my work.
Oh, I'm sure they're really happy to talk to you as well, Steve.
Yeah, right. And they're like, you're right, they're not. And I'm like, well, what the hell happens when stocks and bonds don't do well? The 60-40 portfolio, like Jordan said, is going to be a dumpster fire. You know, how do we move into something else? They're like, well, you got to talk to your human resources department and ask them to add a fund.
Well, yeah, because who else would you talk to?
Right. So I did. I talked to the human resources guys that are in charge of this, and they said they'll look into it. But I'm hoping that that we can put a commodity fund in our deferred comp through work. I don't know what to invest that in. I never thought I'd do this, but I stopped my monthly contribution to that so that I can take that money instead and put it in my other brokerage account and bet the other side, essentially hedge my bet on all the stocks and bonds I have in there, because those are our only options. If George is right, that account is not going to look pretty 5 years from now, you know?
No, kind of sounds like you're fighting an uphill battle there with the human resource department.
I don't know what else to do. Yeah, they do have a fixed account that you can put it in where it's guaranteed 3.6% until August of this year. And then next year it'll be 3.5. But after that, it's probably going to go to like 0.05. You know, but that's not keeping up with inflation. The government's reporting 5% inflation right now for the CPI, but we all know, and we've talked about that before, that's a lie. It's not actually 5%. It's probably closer to 9 or 15. I mean, just look at the prices of gas and Costco. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully I can get a plan put in there, but I don't know.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of money in there. So I'm like, I'd really like to get a commodity fund in here, gentlemen. I'm just afraid everyone at work, including me, is just going to lose their shorts over this coming cycle, because there's nothing you can invest in to hedge your bet.
Steve, I hate to tell you this, but you're probably the only one out of, I don't know, the thousands of people where you work that even care or know about this. So there's nobody on your team. You're team solo.
I think so. When I wrote the letter, I read it over with my parents first to make sure that, you know, I'm not sounding like some crazy guy. And they're like, no, that sounds very articulate and that makes sense. And I'm like, okay. So I sent it off and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully I make a dent.
Yeah, no, it's good. Hey, you're Steve. Now aren't you heading up to go see them?
Oh yeah. I leave tomorrow. Going back up to see the folks up in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And
what are you going to be doing up there?
I'm going to be doing some landscaping. They got five acres up there, only which about 2 or 2.5 acres. So about half or 40% of the property is, has the house and the lawn and driveway and stuff on it. But there's another 2.5 or 3 acres that's just straight, like, I mean, it looks like Amazon jungle. There's so much shrubs and trees, and there's when they got the property in that area, there were some settlers that moved in about 150 years ago, and they planted a bunch of fruit trees. So in all this mass of forest back there, there's, you know, some amazing cherry trees and apple trees and fruit trees and pears and plums and all that stuff, but you just can't get to it. You know, you got to crash through a bunch of blackberry bushes to go pick an apple. So no one wants to do that. And so I'm having a couple of guys out there, some brush clearing service companies that are going to come out and give me a quote. And they've got some machines that can go in there. I think they call it a masticator. And it's kind of like this little vehicle that has like this arm that reaches out with a bunch of spinning blades on it, and it'll just rip the crap out of any bush. And my idea is, you know, I go up there every year to go hunting. And since it's so dense back in there, I'm sure there's deer, but you just can't find or see them. So what I want to do, and I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on this, setting up a small 5 or 10 acre parcel ideally for to attract deer. And so what I want to do is have kind of like these, how can I describe it? Okay, so the property is kind of like a rectangle, right? And the short side of the rectangle starts up at the top of the hill, and it kind of slowly goes down to the bottom of the hill. So what the deer do is they start up off the property and they walk down the hill and they walk through the property, and they're probably on it for maybe 7 minutes. However, comma, what all the YouTubers recommend is they say, set up like these kind of hedgerows, right? And have your trees in the middle of these 6 or 8 foot wide walking paths for the deer. And then just have a hedgerow of blackberry bushes going long ways across the property so they can no longer just cross it real quick in 7 minutes. They have to walk back and forth through the property, picking up apples and cherries along the way to eat, kind of zigzagging back and forth long ways. And then they spend 45 minutes on your property instead of, you know, five. And I'm like, that is a brilliant idea. So
let's just get this straight.
Okay.
You're basically going to go see your parents to set up some fruit trees so when they die, you can have better hunting.
That sounds morbid, but I guess essentially that's what I'm doing.
Just want to be clear about things.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just be clear about that.
Because I'm sure your parents are like, well, you're coming here to visit and to plant fruit trees?
Hopefully I don't have to plant any. Hopefully there should be some back there that are already well developed, but we'll see.
Because
it's going to take a lot of planning. It's
And a lot of time before they mature. And again, your parents won't probably be alive by the time they mature. So, just want to get that all clear and straight with everybody. it's very white of you, Steve.
It is. I even ordered a pair of chaps, you know, the chainsaw chaps, so in case I get tired and just rest the saw on my leg, I won't lose my quad. Got those shipped up there.
These are like assless chaps or just big things?
You know it.
Yeah. Assless chap Steve is whacking away at some blackberry bushes. Wow. Don't forget to put a picture of that up on the website.
Okay. So I'll be Paul Bunyaning up there for a couple of weeks. Looking forward to it.
No, that'll be good. That'll be good. So.
Yeah, I called up already. I got a coin dealer in a town near to them, and it's still tough to get gold and silver up there. You got to order it, and they can get it within about a week.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is I do this about once every 2 months is I'll call around the country, just like pick Chicago and then pick a coin shop and then pick Miami and a coin shop and New York and no one has any supply. They're like, oh yeah, we got a few eagles. Do you want something? I can put it on order, get it for you in 3 weeks. Like, wow. How is the price going down when there's no physical supply?
Yeah, it is a lot harder to get stuff right now. Definitely.
It is. So I think it's coming. It's a matter of like, when is your everyday Joe going to realize that this is coming, and when that happens and everyone moves into the sector, that's when it's just going to skyrocket.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So exciting times.
Yeah. This one, see, is there anything that we didn't cover about Nicaragua?
We're going back. I think that's my future retirement spot.
Yeah.
It's so cheap, so safe.
The safety issue was I know. Well, if you're ever driving, and Steve can attest to this because he has had personal and direct experience. Now, if you ever decide to rent a car or do anything 4x4, decide to go out and hit the road or anything in Nicaragua, what you always need to do is you need to have 200 Were they cordos?
Oh, 200 cordobas. Yeah, because which is about $6, something like that.
$6 worth of money.
Less than that, maybe $5.50.
And you have to be prepared to put that in an envelope if you get pulled over.
Oh, yeah. I got pulled over twice on my way to a mammographer for my stupid COVID test.
Yeah, so Steve here, I was actually on the phone with him while the first one was happening.
Yes.
And called me, oh, yeah, everything's fine. Had to pay my, you know, 200. Because we had a friend of ours who actually warned us all about that. So
yeah, he said, always keep 200 cords on you because if you get pulled over by the cops, they're not going to give you change for a 500.
Yeah. But what was funny is like, I'm like, hey, man, is everything okay? Got your bribe okay? He's like, yeah, no, everything's fine. And you started talking about something else and you're like, I'm getting pulled over again.
It was literally like 7 minutes later. Oh, what the fuck?
You get pulled over two bribes within like 15 minutes. Oh my God, that's glorious.
I was coming up. They set up these traffic cones along the highway. Now this highway is just a two lane road, you know, but it's the biggest highway in the whole country. And they set up cones randomly and they'll have a couple of cops sitting by the cones and they just randomly pull people over and basically shake them down for 200 cords. And I got pulled over by this chick cop and, you know, I rolled down the window and she was telling me that, you know, I changed lanes or something. And I'm like, okay. And so I was like, well, how do I get out of this? Because she has my license now and all the paperwork of the truck. And she was telling me, yeah, like, you know, you got to have a ticket, but you're not going to get this back until you pay the ticket. And you got to go to the courthouse to pay the ticket. And I'm like, and then I start flirting with her and she starts laughing. And I'm like, there's got to be something else we can do for this. And I remembered what Jim told us. And I'm like, oh, 200 cords. Luckily, I have 200 cords on me. And
you listened.
Yeah, so I hand her the 200 cords and then she looks at me and she's all, no. And then she hands me this yellow envelope and she hands me the envelope and I'm like, ah, okay, we don't want the world to know that you're bribing me just like you do everyone else, or you're shaking me down like you do everyone else. So I put the 200 cords in the yellow envelope and then handed it back to her and she's like, okay, have a nice day.
I'm like, well, all right. But the cool thing is it's all very like courteous and cordial. It's not like Mexico where it's, you know, where you're getting this whole thing, you know, and it's like, you know, it's a nice bribe.
Yeah. And from their perspective, you know, they make almost nothing, you know, being a cop. So this is, I look at it as like a direct tax. You're paying them to protect you. You're just not doing it through a sales tax or however else they get it. You're doing it directly.
But you know, I thought it was really nice that they have an envelope set up for you already. And I'm, you know, looks like, you know,
looks official.
Looks official. Has your name on it. No. Yeah. Like, Steve, we've been waiting for you. Here's your envelope.
Yeah, exactly. The second cop that pulled me over, we basically had a conversation for about 5 minutes. He gave me directions and then I put the 200 cords in the envelope and he wished me well.
He's like, say hi to the kids for me.
Yeah, exactly. He shook my hand afterwards and that was that. I was like, wow.
He's like, hey, this great restaurant when you get down to the capital city.
Yeah. So I was actually lost. The GPS failed me. And so he gave me directions to get to the place. I was like, well, that's a nice place.
But what I'm saying, it's not like, you know, you go to these other places, like I said, Mexico particularly, because it's such a like kind of a terrible experience when you get pulled over. It's just, everything's just a pain in the butt. And you're like, all right. And then you're like haggling with the people, you know, over your bribe. And, you know, in Nicaragua, you know, bribe is like, it's great.
Yeah. $5.50. No problem. This would be a $300 fine in America.
Now I'm just throwing it out there. This is kind of off the cuff, but you know, I suspect, you know, DUI is probably about like 15 to 20 bucks.
Yeah. If you hit someone.
If you hit someone. Yeah. If you kill their pig on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So it probably cost you about 20 bucks because I don't think I saw any breathalyzers while I was there.
No. I think there's one, but it's in Managua.
It's probably broken.
Yeah.
And by the way, Managua is a pretty terrible city.
Yeah, I'm not into that place.
And
the whole COVID test thing, it's such a scam. You go to the bank, you pay 150 bucks, and then you have to drive all the way. There's only one COVID test.
No. Back up, Steve. You got to go online. You have to register. There's nothing there's nothing in English. So you have to get everything. You have everything translated. If you don't know Spanish, too bad, so sad. Fill that all out, and there's no direction on like what to do like afterwards. Like, how do you know that you're supposed to go to the bank and pay?
Someone had to tell me that. I didn't know. They don't tell you.
They don't tell you this. So, okay, I went online. I filled my COVID to go take this test. Okay, great. It's $150. Now, okay, where do I pay? And luckily we know people. So you have to go wait in line at a bank for an hour because there's no such thing as online banking, evidently, in the whole country.
No.
So everybody's like at the bank every day. Like you have to wait. Which is really weird because you can go to a grocery store and there's no line, you use the ATM, but if you go to a bank, there's a line for like a half hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the wait in line for the bank, give them your passport. If you forget your passport, woohoo. Yeah. You start all over again.
Yep. Go back home.
Go back home. Get your passport. See you tomorrow.
Yep.
Passport. And then they take a while and they finally give you this little like receipt thing with this microscopic like sticker that has a number on it. And then they put a stamp on it and they give you the receipt with that little tiny microscopic like number with it's a sticker that goes on the receipt. And then you have to, because you're just supposed to know this, of course, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That number is what you need when you go to the capital city, which is the only place in the entire country that does a rapid COVID test.
Yeah.
So now you have, if you lose that receipt, God forbid you do, I don't even know what you need to do to redo that whole process. You probably have to do everything all over again. So I take a picture of it at the very least.
Screenshot it on your phone. Yeah.
Screenshot it. Now you got to go and drive like hours, 36 hours, or within 3 days to the capital city. Now that is what I call a shit show to what's called Mensa, the Ministry of Health. That's like, those are just monkeys fucking footballs everywhere.
Oh yeah. Nobody knows what the hell's going on. There's no organization.
It's like a complex of just like all these like probably like 20 areas of people just sitting down in groups, people at different cash counters. It's like hodgepodge to the max. And you're supposed to follow this thing that says COVID test. It's literally the opposite end of the like whole place, which is like, it's huge. It's a big place. And you got to go all the way to the end. And then you get to the end and you're like, okay, I got this passport. I got this sticker. I got this paper. Nobody will tell you what to go or where to go. Finally, at the very end of like literally thousands of people, you're like, I'm here. And you just have to magically appear at the very end of this place and they put you in a seat. Is that what happened to you as well?
Yep, same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then in that process, how long did that take you to go through the test?
An hour and a half. I got later than you though. I got there at like 9:30. Only open from 7 a.m. until 11. So if you're if you're there at 11:10, which our buddy did, he drove all the way down to Managua, got there at 11:10, and then he drove all the way back to Esteli because he had to go the next day. He missed it.
Get there. If you're gonna get there by 8 o'clock at the latest, if you can. 7 to 11 is the only window of time. And then, so you take the test, you get a swab, and you have your sticker and or whatever. And then now you just sit there like a bump on a log and you're like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Where do I go? Do I wait? Or I had no idea what to do. I'm like, por favor, ayuda me. you're literally like just sitting there like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So finally, someone's like, okay, well, you see that little microscopic sticker? See that little number on there? Now, when you get home and tonight, okay, log back in, go to this Resultos thingamajigger. That's the third one over, I'm like, okay. And then you finally plug that number in and hopefully you don't have a positive test.
Yeah. Which you were worried about because you literally had a cold at that time and you were just.
I was in bed for 3 days.
Oh,
yeah. I was in bed because our friend, he must've got me sick because he was sick before me. And
were making out the whole trip. So
yeah, you know, I was practicing being gay, of course. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do.
You and Joe were just lying.
Yeah. 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 We're just sharing drinks and Mai Tais umbrellas, you know, doing our thing. So, but bottom line, I partied myself to death. Okay. And I got sick. That's bottom line. That's what happened. Drinking, women, bottle service tables. Yes. Let's not sugarcoat this. Okay. I never got home before 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got sick and I was stressed because I thought, oh my God, I got COVID. Oh my God. And so, yeah, I drove just sick. I'm like sneezing, coughing, you know, antibiotics. And I'm like, oh great, I'm gonna go take a COVID test. Like I'm like hacking up like lung. Yeah, I was a little, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little stressed. There was a part of me was going, oh shit.
Yeah, I'm gonna get a positive test and be stuck in the country for another month. I can't get home.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little, yeah. So
yeah.
So there you go, folks. There's all you need to know.
Yep. Yep. Oh, random synapse here. The stock AT&T we got, you know, for the 7% dividend, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, whatever that was.
Yeah.
I found out they're going to be halving their dividend.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So food for thought. I think I may wait until it has a little bump and then, and then dump it. I'm not sure. Or maybe have my position. I'm not sure. I know we talked about it on the show and I just learned that today. So,
okay. That's good. Well, that's good news.
Food for thought.
Food for thought.
Yeah. But, I think that's it. Unless you can think of anything, Daniel, if you guys want some cigars, let us know. I guess that's it. We got a review, from Mal Foxley, Stephen Daniel. Hosts of the In It to Win It show highlight all aspects of investing and much more in this can't-miss podcast. The hosts and expert guests offer insightful advice and information that is helpful to anyone that listens.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
5 stars. Thank you very much.
Oh, man.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. If you want to leave a review, please do so on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever outlet YouTube you listen to. You can go to stevebartonmoney.com for all past episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, stevebartonmoney@gmail.com. And thank you for listening. Thank you for telling a friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Thank you for being a friend, yes. And thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
80% of success is psychology, 20% is mechanics. The problem is most people live in their heads. They have their dream, they have their goal, they have a desire, they get hyped up about it, they get fearful about it, and they just don't execute.
See, when you are not filling your life with the things that you are capable of doing, then there are gaps in your life. And what we do when we're not living out our true identity, we begin to fill the gaps. We fill the holes with garbage, alcohol, drugs, worry, self-destructive behavior. So when you begin to look at your life and you know that you're not doing what you can do because you have allowed yourself to be held captive by your fears. Now, when you don't have a true appreciation and acceptance for who you are, and you allow yourself to be immobilized by fear, what happens in the process is that you begin to abuse yourself. You begin to sabotage your life, you begin to sabotage your dreams, you begin to unconsciously work against yourself. You become your own worst enemy. So what do you do about that?
I need a mission. We all need a mission. That's what life should be, is a mission. That's what gives your life purpose and focus and drive and ultimately satisfaction.
There's things that you know you're supposed to do as a human being.
things that you know are going to improve your life. Do those things. There's things that you know are going to make you a worse person and make your life worse. Don't do those things. And sometimes people ask me what to do if they don't know what their mission is or what their mission should be. And I tell them, if they're in that situation, to go help someone. Go help someone else. Make that your mission. Because that will make you better. And it'll make the world better. And eventually from that, you'll see what your mission is.
Well, you begin to realize that your dream and your gifts have so much meaning and so much value for you till your hunger for them will give you a special drive. As you work on yourself, as you begin to acknowledge your true identity, the true power that you have, the true capacity you have to bring about change, the miracle working power that you have within yourself to do the things that you want to do.
You only live once, so do what you feel passionate about.